Good evening and welcome to What Should I Watch, episode 32, right? Yeah, it is 32. How are we doing, guys?
Doing pretty good, yeah. Doing pretty good.
Can't believe it, 2 weeks in a row. I know, right? Yeah.
I know. For a while there, it looked like we were going to have similar issues. Mike was starting to flake on us. And I was like, this is going to be another week like where I offer myself to Steve and he just fucking snubs me. I said, Steve, what about if we record together like buddies do? And Steve's all like, nah, man, I'm washing my hair.
Yeah.
I mean my beard. I'm washing my beard.
Now we'll do a one-on-one, Mark. We might even record it.
I think we should.
So who's got the coconut oil?
I know, right? Speaking of which, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Mike. What's this? There's a new one.
Yeah. Well, it's been floating around on Netflix since January, I think, but I only finally got around to watching it. So it's a reboot from the original, whereby they completely ignore all the sequels and whatnot. So basically, the massacre happened a long time ago. Everybody forgot about it, and old Leatherface has been sitting around in this abandoned town for the last 40 years. And then a bunch of Instagram influencers decide to buy the town, which is by now abandoned, except for his house. Brilliant. And then they all move in on a big party bus to... auction off.
This is brilliant.
Auction off. I'm already.
You've seen Fyre Festival.
More or less.
If ever there was a more deserving victim pool, it's a party.
I was going to say
influencers.
I was going to say you can imagine this in the cinema and everyone cheering them on. Going, yeah. Get him! No, there's one getting away. Get him! Yeah, no, slow down the chainsaw. Don't make it quick.
Could I make a guess or two here?
Go on.
Is it possible that there's one or two who are on that bus that are either like girlfriends or boyfriends and not really influencers and they wind up being kind of the people we don't want to die?
Amazing, Mark. Absolutely stunning prediction there.
Write this shit.
Is there noise outside that someone has to investigate?
It's almost like you've seen a movie like this before.
I know, right?
Did anyone say they would be right back?
Now that you mention it.
That's so funny.
And they have one cool guy who's a local. He's actually the only local. He's got a garage in the town. I don't know where his customers come from because there's nobody else in the town, but he has a truck to work on.
Is he always filthy? He's
been working on the truck for the last 20 years. But he doesn't hold with influencers because they'd be, you know, bringing the tone down.
Of course.
Yeah, with me and my one friend, that dude with the leather face.
What's the production like? Is there money in it?
Yeah, it actually looks quite good. I think they like. I don't know how expensive it is to rent an abandoned town for an afternoon, but the town that they did rent looked pretty good. Yeah, I mean, it did look kind of old, abandoned, and creepy, which is pretty well everything you need in a movie like this. But they do have a. This is a fault in my research. They brought back one of the original characters from 73. But
is he getting too old for this shit?
It's
2 days from retirement.
It's a female who's definitely too old for this shit. She's been sitting there stewing in her own revenge pool for the last 40 years. And she finally hears that stuff is going down again. So this is what she's been waiting for all this time. I didn't check if it's the same actress or not. Now they have an actress of an age to fill the role, but I didn't check if it's the original actress. If it was, that would be cool.
She's Irish, you know.
Was she?
Yeah, Alwyn.
Before or after she got her
Ferrer.
Head.
Ferrer. Right. She's from Galway. Yeah, but
no
that.
Way.
Yeah.
Um, So yeah, the movie is it's a bit crap. To be honest. Dear.
That's a pity.
No, she wasn't in the original.
But it is entertaining seeing the influencers getting their comeuppance. There's an absolutely fantastic bus scene. You know, narrow space, large chainsaw.
Oh God.
Hilarious.
Oh jeez.
But I think that's actually my problem with this movie is that it's set up to be a comedic parody of its own genre.
Okay.
But it seemed like they were taking it seriously. I wasn't sure, was I supposed to laugh at these people getting cut up or cry?
Because that's always hilarious.
So, Mike, was it all jump scares or was there a good bit of tension?
It was... no, it wasn't that well balanced in terms of scares and tension. You could kind of see a lot of them coming from 20 miles off.
Okay.
And some of the characters that we're kind of rooting for didn't last as long as you'd hoped for. You know, you're looking for a last stand kind of a thing. And rather than, oh, look at that guy. He's kind of cool. Oh, boo, he's gone.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Let's just follow this person that's not interesting for the rest of the movie.
Is it B-movie-tastic?
It's definitely a better production value than a B-movie. Hmm. But there, it does have definite B-movie roots, I think. So I did enjoy it, but it's not something I think I'll come back to 10 years from now and say, well, wasn't that a pretty movie?
Would you recommend it for anyone else?
I think people who really dislike influencers will find this very sad.
Me and Steve are all over this then.
Perfect. Mike, so there's a movie that you also saw this week called The Northman. Do you know there's a link between the two?
No way.
Is there?
Yeah, there is a link. And it's
did they have chainsaws in the 8th century?
No, it's none other than our friend, Alwyn, who's in both of them.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Nobody else.
Did not see that coming. Yeah.
So tell us about The Northman.
So The Northman is a Viking movie. Mm-hmm. with a very large budget. I think they gave it $70 million.
That's a lot of landships.
Yes, it certainly is.
There's a lot of dinners in Donegal where they film most of it.
The director... Here,
was it? Yeah, Antrim in Donegal, yeah.
The director was the same guy who did The Lighthouse.
All right.
And so I think he's used to kind of small budgets. And I think he was probably a little overwhelmed by the sheer amount of money he had to spend on this one.
Do you think he had a load of money left over and he was just like shrugging his shoulders at the producer going, I don't know what to do with it. We painted the boats twice.
Well, flying first class home.
Cans of Dutch gold. But yeah, it's set in Viking land. Basically, you have a royal family, and the uncle decides to kill King Daddy, and young lad sees all this happen, sort of like back in Conan 1982-81 time, and decides he's going to have his vengeance on this bad uncle. And then, it goes from there.
So how does it compare to the Vikings TV show?
I think they've spent a little more time on making it look pretty. The Vikings...
Pretty? No, like pretty as in it's not gritty. It's all pretty, or pretty as in it looks amazing?
As in it looks amazing. Okay. They've done a fantastic job in terms of onomatopoeia and stuff like that. It's just... the world itself is threatening you, and it looks cold, it looks uncomfortable, it looks fucking like hell on earth, only we have to live here. It's like living in Ireland.
Oh, it was in Ireland. And they said it was shit doing it. They said they were up to their oxters in mud and coldness for 7 months. They said it was during COVID when they did it as well. So there was no like going down to the pub to warm up and stuff.
Oh God.
No, they were in the field, literally. Yeah. No, they've spoken at length about it. Nightmare. Yeah.
I think the misery comes through. It's fucking horrible.
Oh yeah, I'd say what they got paid would probably, you know, help them out there a little bit. They wouldn't mind it too much, you know.
And all that Dutch gold. So I'm a big fan. True Blood days. How was he in this?
Oh, he's great. It really is. But I'm struggling to think, what age is that guy?
I imagine he's about...
Was he Lars Sarsgaard or... Is that his name?
He must be in his 50s at this stage.
No, he is...
And Alexander Sarsgaard, sorry.
He's 45. Sarsgaard.
45. He is jacked as fuck.
He's in good shape, yeah.
Yeah, for somebody of that age, it's got to be some roidism going on.
What are you saying, Mike?
I'm sure he's on the natch.
Not that I would like to cast aspersions on the poor man, but yeah.
And the other question I had, I've seen the trailers, I haven't seen the movie. There seems to be a kind of a mystical element to it. How did that play out?
Very much so. And it's kind of controversial. I would say the majority of the reviewers hated it.
Really?
Yes.
Right.
They liked the action-y aspect. Yeah. They didn't really like the shall we say spiritual kind of thing going on, dream sequences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For me, that wasn't a problem. I enjoyed it.
Tell me, did you spot Willem Dafoe?
Willem Dafoe? No, I didn't.
Did you spot Nicole Kidman?
I spotted Nicole Kidman, all right. I didn't notice Willem Dafoe.
Did you spot Bjorg?
Yes, I did.
Okay. It's quite the cast. Bill Skarsgård is in there as well as Alexander. And what was his co-star, Anya Taylor-Joy? And who else was in it? Oh, yeah, Ethan Hawke was in it too.
Yeah, he's in everything we review these days. Mike, is it so? On the sorry to bring you back to the magic and stuff, but is it like the way they did it in 300?
300 isn't
stylized. They had an oracle or a set of oracles. As it was
300 isn't a bad comparison. It's it's taking the mythology and taking it for itself. It's not trying to make excuses for it. It's just like here it is. And if you don't like it, go fuck yourself.
Which many people did.
Apparently many people hated it.
Yeah.
So it was a big risk, I suppose, in terms of filmmaking. Well, not in terms of filmmaking, but in terms of making a profit off it. But for me it worked. I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was true to what they were trying to do. I suppose it's a big trade-off then with the action part, because it's such a difference.
It's a revenge movie, right? Sorry.
More or less, yeah.
Well, I was wondering, like, good revenge movies have you eager for that revenge to happen. So you're sitting there coming into Act 3 going, go on, give it to him.
Yeah. You know. I think that's possibly one of the weaker parts of it, because they decide to complicate it. Like a great revenge movie like Conan keeps it pure. Whereas in this, they start to go shades of gray. The closer he gets to the goal, the more he realizes it's not maybe as simple as he thought.
Yeah. There has to be some damn complication. Yeah.
So I can see why they did it, but in terms of pure vengeance tales, it's probably not the best decision they made.
I see they've brought in 3.4 million worldwide so far.
Is that all?
But it's not released in the States yet, which is
okay.
Day after tomorrow. Actually, so if you're listening to this on Friday, it's today.
So when you say the revenge got complicated, is this like Cain Velasquez complicated?
No, I'm not sure of the reference. I don't know.
Cain Velasquez is a UFC fighter who found out about... what's the best way of saying it? That there was a paedophile after interfering with his kid, I think.
Really? Okay.
And he went after him.
Did not know this.
With a gun. And shot him. Like, he barely shot him 40 times.
Whoa.
And it wasn't the guy. It was the guy's dad.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What?
The only thing I can't remember, this is an old story now. He pursued Gunnarte Jr. for 11 miles while firing multiple rounds of 40 caliber rounds, not 40 times.
Jesus. So
he did shoot him quite a lot of times, though, apparently. And it was definitely not the guy. It was the story I heard. But I'm just trying to find, was it actually his own
Amazon
daughter? Anyway, I've brought us on a severe tangent. Revenge can be complicated, was the point I was trying to make. And poor old Cain Velasquez, the whole of the MMA community came up in arms to say, should I do it myself? But I think everyone's kind of saying, well, had he just chased him down and maybe hit him a slap or two, he'd probably have gotten off with slapping the wrist himself.
I was kind of thinking that. What the hell? He's no business carrying a gun. He doesn't need one. No,
definitely not. So Jesus Christ, a punch off that boy would be same as a bullet to the rest of us. But it sounds like the Northman is in the should watch category anyway.
Yeah. Sounds up my street, all right.
Speaking of which, Steve, I think it's time. I think it's time we talked about F9.
Tell me, is it better than F1?
It's 8 times better than F1, of course. But in this series, F1 would have been called The Fast and the Furious. This is the 9th one. Can you believe it?
Oh. That's what F9 is. Okay. F9 is. I didn't know what it was. Okay, I got you. Yeah. Family. Wait,
do you know the way family? You get the joke now.
Family. Family. Not their family. It's family.
So, speaking of family, do you know the way they say some families have strong genes?
Okay.
Well, Dominic Toretto, the character played by Vin Diesel.
Family.
The Toretto family appear to have strong genes as well. Because it turns out in F9 that he had an estranged brother that none of us knew about.
Uh-huh.
And so there's only one man who could play the estranged brother, and that's John Cena.
No way.
So they're nearly identical, the two of them.
Is this because The Rock wouldn't do another movie with him?
Well, they can't put The Rock and Vin Diesel together anymore. So Rock
that's
is
what I mean.
doing offshoots. Yeah, I don't know if it is or not. But
I wonder.
But the long and the short of it is like the Fast and the Furious franchise started out as a very gritty crime drama, right? It was an undercover story, a guy going native. They had cars in there to keep people who like cars interested. And there was car racing and action and some really cool stunt driving. And like these were all elements of a great film back then, right? It is no comparison to what's going on now. But by God, do they pretend that it's the same kind of movie? So they're like,
it's all about family.
It's like they're pretending it's the same what thing. Family? It's not the same thing. They now all have superpowers and their cars are magic.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh. Were these the same cars that chased down the submarine over the ice pack?
No, that's James Bond, wasn't it?
That's James Bond.
Actually, you're right. Yeah. They're the ones that also went through the skyscraper and into the other skyscraper.
Yeah. That's right.
That was the fastest submarine I've ever seen.
Then they jumped over the tank. Oh, yeah. But it was on ice.
They jumped the tank anyway. But so look at, long story short, Toretto comes out of retirement one last time because they need him to help with the job and save the world.
For a 9th time.
And like these guys, remember in Fast and Furious 1, in Fast and Furious 1, there were petty criminals, right, who were trying to like branch out into grand larceny. And they were getting caught by the cops. Like, so like this is all within the realms of fairly, of reality. And in this one, they're all fucking secret agents. And Dominic Toretto basically knows like a secret agent in every country in the world. And I'm going like, where is the person that we were introduced to in the Fast and the Furious, like who looked like he'd never left 30 mile radius of his house except to go to prison? Like,
the boy done grew up.
it's mental. And like, it's, I don't think people who watch this franchise now come to it because they like the first movie, you know, they like the saga. Right?
Yeah.
But so anyway, the movie is filled with crazy stunts that are good to watch, but it's very difficult not to apply the laws of physics to some of the things that they do.
Don't you be doing that now.
No, you kind of have to look at it a bit like Sonic the Hedgehog.
You kind of do, yeah. That's a good analogy, yeah. To be honest. So at one stage, is it Michelle Rodriguez? Is there any? Yeah, Michelle Rodriguez catches Vin Diesel with one arm as he is hurtling past her towards the ground. And she reaches out and catches him with one arm.
Those curls paid off.
That would dislocate your shoulder and possibly rip your arm entirely away from your body. Like that's, you know, if I did it, it would probably have a similar effect. None of mine, a girl who weighs like a third of my weight. Like,
But he's only a small lad. Like.
Oh, bless us and save us. My favorite stunt from the whole thing, which I'm sure you guys would appreciate, is they're driving towards a rope bridge with a high performance car followed by what could only be described as an SUV, sorry, not an SUV, a Hummer that has had extra armor plating put on. Rope bridge, don't forget. So the first two cars drive over it, and unfortunately, some people shoot rockets at the bridge and it collapses under them, but they drive fast, so they get to the other side. Okay.
Nice.
That's what you have to do if a bridge is falling out from underneath you. I wasn't aware. But Dominic Toretto is a bit further back the road and he's coming at it flat in his high performance car. Now, you or I would stop.
Yeah.
Not Dom Toretto.
No, speeds up, I'd say.
He speeds up and puts his hand over the NAS.
Yeah.
that's not a euphemism for those of you that haven't seen Fast and Furious before. He hits the NAS and aims his car directly at one of the poles that has a cable still attached.
Oh, no way.
And then expertly locks the steering wheel really, really quickly to trap the cable in the place where the wheel is.
Yeah.
And then uses that to swing his car across the divide.
Give over.
I've done it a million times.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
It's like magic. They're magic cars, you know? Oh God, I think I can remember like Fast and Furious used to be a huge thing in the racing community, and it's a fairly healthy community up here where I live. Like,
so, I mean, the biggest trick in the first one was the muscle car doing a wheelie, you know?
Because there was so much torque on the engine. Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was the biggest trick in it, you know?
So John Cena does what John Cena does in it, and he manages to fit in a few wrestling moves because I think that's part of his contract. And everybody plays the same characters they've been playing. That's kind of it. Like it's long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is like, you really need to commit to watch something like that for that long.
Now, I know you're a big fan of the series, obviously, if you're watching the ninth one, but is this one not, I'm getting a feeling it's not up to your usual standards. I think you've sort of, has it lost its way in the last few? And you were just hoping beyond hope that they might be back to the old,
the magic. I never thought watching this one, I didn't go into this one thinking I would enjoy it, honestly. I said, I'll put this on, it'll be something to talk to the boys about.
Yeah.
I don't know the point I wanted to make. All right, it's gone, doesn't matter. Okay. Anyway, I think it's an awful movie. It's really, really bad. And for something that has so much action in it, it's a real departure in character for me to say that, but I don't think anyone should fucking kill their brain cells with this.
Really?
I remember the thing I wanted to say.
Oh, yeah. Terrible, Mark.
The first movie is a good one, right?
Yeah.
And there's a really good scene between Paul Walker, rest in peace, and Vin Diesel, where Vin Diesel randomly decides to tell him about a very painful moment in his childhood, because sometimes that's how you have to do character establishment.
Family.
And he talks about this event that happened when he was a kid, and his dad at the racetrack gets T-boned by another racer, dies, and he winds up sledging this guy with a wrench and going to jail for it, going to juvenile for it. So they revisit that. They do a flashback to that. And they have a guy that looks a bit like Vin Diesel, to be fair. And they they use some weird thing to make a voice out of him. But anyway, it doesn't matter how they did it. But my problem was they should have left that stuff alone. Mm-hmm. Because that was actually a reasonable movie with reasonable story.
Yeah.
And now what they've done is, it's like they've gone, it's like, I hate when they redact things. Like, so they've changed the way that actually played out. So the story now he told was entirely incomplete to Paul Walker. So that moment then that he shared with him is invalidated, because he
didn't
tell the story at all. Like, you know? And in fact, the reason why Vin was holding the wrench wasn't what he said it was. In the Yeah. So anyway, that was my...
That actually gives me a lot of hope, because I remember too many years ago you defending Fast and Furious 3 and 4 and 5 to the hilt, and saying that we didn't understand it, we weren't giving it a chance, and that generally we were just bad people for not liking it.
Well, why those things are true.
So bear with me. There is a further point. So what I'm hoping is in 10 or 15 or maybe even 20 years' time, you will have matured enough to sit down and apologize to Steve and myself for making us watch all those fucking Marvel movies.
That'll be after F26. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it's a should not watch. Even if you like cars and amazing driving, there wasn't a lot of great driving in this, because the cars are magic.
At least
in the earlier movies, you could say, well, that's cool if you're able to do that, conceivably there were drivers that could. None of this.
Yeah. Back then it was cool stunt. Now it's reasonable animation.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I hear you. So, what else to see, Mark?
Are you all up to date with everyone's favorite Derry Girls?
No, actually, not yet, but I can't wait. Do you want to give us a...
Never seen a single episode.
Oh, you don't know what you're missing.
Really?
Yeah, no, really. No.
It looks like a shit fucking...
It does. And I had the same reservations and I thought, oh God, but it's kind of what Channel 4 did with Father Ted.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of way. And... No, it's excellent. It hits the right points. It's very, very funny. Now, I have to say, it did take me two to get into
it. Girls or whatever.
No, it's different. Completely different humor. Yeah, nothing like that. No.
There was an homage.
It's very professional.
There was an homage to Father Ted in last night's episode.
Oh, was there? Oh, cool.
It was, yeah.
I'm
created a scene from
it. I'm really looking forward to it. Season 1 is on Netflix. I don't know why season 2 isn't, but anyway, there's season 3 now. Or on Sky, is it?
Yeah. It's on Sky, yeah.
Yeah.
Sky is where I watched it anyway. Does anyone remember London Irish, a TV show from a lot of years ago now?
Yeah.
So I thought that was hilarious. And it was cancelled after one season, which I thought was a real pity. It just didn't find an audience. That was written by Lisa McGee, who is also the writer of Derry Girls, right?
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So she managed to twist the formula a bit and talk about Irishness. With and resonate with an audience, right?
Yeah.
So it's schoolgirls having the crack and the lols with a backdrop of sectarian violence in Northern Ireland, right? Now, it's the good episodes are where they make that contrast sharp, right?
Yeah.
And then when they don't, I don't find the episodes as good, but they're usually funny. It's very rarely I wouldn't laugh a lot watching an episode.
Yeah.
I thought they jumped the shark last season. Because they did an episode where the parents eat hash brownies.
Okay.
And I went, right, I think I've seen this in every single American sitcom.
Yeah.
So you're obviously stuck for ideas when you did this one.
Yeah. Right?
And then season 2 finishes with the boy in the group, whose name escapes me, declaring that he was a Derry girl too, even though nobody in the TV show had ever referred to themselves as Derry girls.
Mm.
I guess they don't need to because they're from Derry and they're female, right? And this is before wokeism, so it wasn't all that complicated. But so
it's hilarious. No one in the series remembered his name either. That's it was the hilarious joke that was going on all the way through it. It was brilliant.
No, I felt,
James, that was his name in it. Yeah.
I felt coming out of season 2, I said, look, this I think has run its course and maybe this would be a good time to leave it, right?
Yeah.
And there was talk then they were going to do a movie and I said, yeah, that's a good idea. that's a good way to kind of put a cap on it. But in the end, they got approved for a third season and now it's on. Right. Now, I have to say, I think these episodes are definitely better than the ones that I didn't like in season two, because I liked a lot of episodes of season two, mm-hmm. which is not all of them. Mm. And there's a pretty impressive cameo in episode one of season three. Everybody knows about it now. I don't know if you want me to spoil it on you or not, Steve.
I don't know, but go on, tell me.
Liam Neeson is in it.
No way. Sorry. Oh, yeah, cool.
He is, yeah. So it's good. The first episode is it's a kind of a madcap adventure. I enjoyed it a lot. So you know in these comedies, right, the way characters tend to become almost parodies of themselves as time goes on. Like if you think about Ross towards the end of Friends, right? Yeah. He had become so extreme in his personality quirks that people thought were funny that he was really like hard to watch. So that's happened to all of them, right, in this. Mm. But I think they're still on the funny side of it at the moment. Mm. But I'm pretty sure this is the last season.
Well, you mean as in they're playing up their character?
Yeah, like the things that people liked about them the last two seasons are now dialed up to 11.
Oh, okay, okay.
For all of them.
Yeah.
But so that the first week was good. So last night's one, I think, was probably a better episode. There's some really good acting from the mother in it that leads to a fairly interesting storyline and what people on the internet are describing as an iconic moment.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Is Tommy Tiernan in it?
Tommy Tiernan is in it, and he's very good in this.
Yeah, movie. He's brilliant in the rest of it. It's just brilliant.
Ian McElhinney as Grandpa Joe is brilliant. Yeah.
And their dynamic is just one of the most hilarious relationships, you know.
Yeah,
it's great. Mike, you got to get on this, especially, you know, there being a local girl now, local talent.
I don't know. I really don't like Tommy Tiernan. You're not sending it to me, boys.
Yeah, he's not being Tommy Tiernan in it. You have to remember he's acting.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Tara Lynn O'Neill plays the mother. She's been in a few things, including Line of Duty, but she was very good last night. She had a really good. She kind of she did a monologue, an angry monologue that you've probably all heard in your house at home at one stage or another. And I thought this is a brilliant recreation of elements of my childhood. So I think they do a lot of things well. I think like what Lisa McGee seems to be good at is capturing that moment, you know, capturing the kind of people and how they relate to each other and then just making it real. At least that's how I'm interacting with it. Yeah. So it's good. If you haven't watched it, you probably should give it a chance and see if you like it. Maybe it's not for everyone, but geez, an awful lot of people like it. They have a mural in Derry now.
No way.
Let's not forget.
Wow. Yeah.
Giant I heard mural they painted the over Bobby Sands.
They did.
I didn't hear that.
I don't think so.
So it's a should watch for me anyway.
Excellent. What should we watch? We watch that. Yeah. Let me see. We've gone on. We've a lot to talk about actually still. So let's move on. Mark, will you tell us about Slow Horses?
Yeah, sure. So Slow Horses is about disgraced or old MI5 agents who are kind of put onto this kind of team of losers where they kind of sit around and waste away their career because for one reason or another they haven't been fired, but nobody wants to give them real work. So this group is led by Gary Oldman, a very, very bitter old agent at this stage. And he's joined by Chris Riley's character, whose name escapes me, Nick Duffy. And he is...
That's his name. Yeah, gotcha.
He has just been kind of the lead in a botched operation. And we get to see that first, and then he gets dumped out to this team, and then we start to watch him try to come to grips with his new life. So despite the fact it's a jumping ground for failed agents, there's a couple of really good agents there. Mm. And they start to uncover mysteries, I suppose. Yeah. And that's kind of
what it is. So there's something going on. Yeah. I think you mean Jack Loudon was the guy.
Sorry.
No, you're right. No, Nick is in there as well. But Jack Loudon is the guy who we see at the start, which now this is a very interesting scene because it's one that we've seen many times before in a kind of a 24 kind of genre where you have everyone back at you know, HQ watching with all the cameras and everyone connected and watching their agent on the ground trying to intercept some bad guy. And then it goes from there. But the difference with that is in this one, they did it very well. I think they did a lot better in previous ones. Now, it's not central to the story, but it's just an example of the writing and the production. So I think it's very strong.
It was well created, all right.
Yeah. Gary Oldman's brilliant and is a grumpy old man. Mike, you would absolutely love it. Oh, he is so insulting and he's so obnoxious and he's so disgusting. You would absolutely love it. Say that again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah. You're actually what?
Sorry, I'm actually really sorry I missed this one. I saw Gary Oldman and fucking
Kirsten Scott Thomas, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and well, washed up fucking.
Oh, he's so funny.
He is so good. When I saw this pop up on Apple TV, I went, right, hold on, this has to be decent. Like, because Gary Oldman tends not to do rubbish. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And when I watched the episode, then, like, I do think it's great. I'll talk about what I didn't like about it in a minute. Because ultimately I decided it wasn't for me.
Okay.
But I messaged my outlet and I said, you got to get on this. Because he loves MI5 stuff. He prefers it to the CIA for some reason.
Yeah.
With the exception of Jack Reacher. Yeah. And he said, oh, I'm already watching it. It's brilliant. Right up their street. There was something about this that didn't grab me. So I think Gary Oldman is brilliant. And I think all of the characters they created are very well and quickly established. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I know them and all this good stuff for a pilot. So I think the pilot was very, very skillful, but I just wasn't interested. And I don't know, is it because I don't have a great interest in the spy genre?
Yeah.
Or if the plot hooks for, I guess, the season-long plot didn't find their way into me the way they might have done.
Right.
I was briefly intrigued at... Well, I don't want to give too much away, but there was that opening scene did feature later in the episode as well, and that interested me, but not quite enough that I would watch more of it. So I think it's really good TV, and this, like everything I've just said, is there, but it just didn't get over the lip of all the other stuff I'm going to watch instead. So not quite there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's such a shame that Steak Knife didn't have you in his corner, Mark. You know. Like when he had the money in the bag and they said, come on, you want to set out your friends. If you had Mark in your corner just said, I don't know about these MI5 guys. They're not that interesting. History would have been changed.
Yeah, true story. Are you going to watch more of it, Steve?
Yeah. So I really enjoyed this. And I went and watched another 3. I'm 4 deep. I don't think there's much more, but it does get better. Like not that it gets better, but the story expands, and so you get more, you know, more out of it. You know, let's say. But it's certainly the plot twists are great, and Gary Oldman comes into his own, and Kirsten Scott Thomas is excellent too. I think it's well worth the look. I'm really enjoying it, actually.
I'm very close. Like, I was really close to sticking on another episode. I'm just going, like, there's so much good TV.
It's very much 24-esque, you know, without the dagger looking at each other and all the heavy breathing.
I have a question about that, right? I have a question about that, because I did get the 24 vibe off it as well, except, right, Jack Bauer would do anything because he believes that the job is supremely important.
Yeah.
But I got the impression right from the opening that our protagonist here thought that their being perceived as good at the job was more important than anything.
No, it's way filthier than that. And they turn out to be cannibals in a way. They're eating each other. Like, it's hilarious. Yeah. No, it's there's such an internal power sort of struggle. So suddenly several camps internally that are the issue rather than the external being the issue. You know, of course they, you know, it does have that, you know, that mechanism where they're up against time. you know, so that's kind of drives the first few episodes anyway. But when that goes, or if it goes, then the internal struggles are the story, which is brilliant. Yeah. It's really enjoyable. I'd encourage you to get back to it when you're done with all the other stuff that's above the line.
I might, but on the complete opposite side of the coin, then do you want to talk about Outer Range?
Outer Range, American mystery thriller. It's on Amazon Prime. It stars, what's his face with the big beard?
Josh Brolin.
Yeah, thanks. And so he's on like a family ranch that's struggling, and so he's under financial pressure, and then he discovers something on his land that is mysterious and intriguing. That's a good synopsis.
That's where it starts.
If I wasn't to give anything away, Imogen Poots is in this as well. People might know her. So what do we think, Mike?
I think that was quite a dagger before me. So, do you remember last week I was giving out about mixing genres?
Yeah.
Because I do. The comedy and...
Every week, isn't it?
Yeah. This one kind of works. The last time I... Well, sorry. Let me start again. The genre mixing is cowboys and sci-fi.
Yeah. Popularized by cowboys and aliens.
That was the only and last one I can remember where they tried to do this.
Yeah.
Well, there was Wild Wild West, a less successful before that.
I'm kind of thinking cowboys and aliens was a swing and a miss. I loved the effort, but it didn't quite work. Yeah. This one is a good effort, I think. And it's okay. Let me say the very first thing that struck me about the whole, this is H.P. Lovecraft, The Color Out of Space. And I'm putting it out there for the rest of the series. Yeah. That's how that's going to work out. Because let's face it, Hollywood doesn't do new ideas these days.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have we all watched two episodes?
I've watched as many as I could get my hands on. Two in existence. Is there only two at the moment? Right. Okay. Yeah. I've watched both. Yeah.
Now there is a guy out there on YouTube land who claims to have seen them all. But I don't know how he managed that.
The director.
Or director's nephew or something.
His dad is in the editing room or something.
Yeah. But that's fucking cheating.
Yeah.
But for me, the very first thing that struck me was, they set it in actual Western land. So I think it was filmed in Albuquerque or something like that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
So what was it? The Power of the Mutt or whatever that was fucking filmed in New Zealand.
Power of the Dog.
Yeah. Oh, no. Was it filmed there or was she just from there? The director?
It was filmed there.
Was it? I thought it was Montana or somewhere. Okay, all right.
It was set in Montana, but they were too fucking cheap to fucking film it there.
If they filmed that in New Zealand? Okay, go on, yeah. I didn't know that. That's worse. Yeah, did not know that.
So this actually looks and feels as it should be. It's like, we're in Western land. It looks Western. Imagine that.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin, he's just born to play these roles.
He really is.
Yeah. You know,
What would he be doing other than playing these kind of roles?
You know? I'd be sitting at home chewing leather.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he looks like he does every night. He just sits there chewing leather. You know, he's one of those kind of guys.
And he actually turns the leather from leather into tobacco and then spits.
Yeah.
That's his gift.
He just has to sit there being brilliant.
He's deadly, isn't he?
He is brilliant. Yeah. The thing about this particular show. So I love this. This is one yeah. of my favorite things that we've watched in a while.
Yeah.
Like, I literally cannot wait for Friday when the next episode comes out on Amazon Prime.
Is that one it is? Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. Can't wait to, yeah.
So we should probably mention, anyway, what I was going to say was, you could have left out the sci-fi elements of this and still have a great show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it's a very, very minor part of it, really. Except for the hook.
It's probably going to become bigger, I'd imagine. But even if it doesn't, in many ways, you didn't need it. You had a fully formed story without it.
Yeah.
And then the sci-fi elements just add more to it.
Yeah.
And that was it. Because I was already interested in all the characters. Like, they're all gone through tough times. And, like, you had one of the characters I really enjoyed is Tom Pelfrey. He plays one of the sons, whose name I can't remember. But he played Perry. He plays Perry Abbott. He played Ward in Iron Fist, if any of you remember him from that.
No.
He was brilliant as kind of the semi-antagonist in that.
Oh, okay.
But he was a sleazebag. He was really good. And that's not his character here. So he's a really versatile actor. He
So he's the nice brother.
He does well to a degree, I suppose. Yeah. Anyway, both of the Abbott brothers are great, as is the mother. And I'm looking for the name of the
Will
guy.
Patton is the guy you're looking for.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Will Patton is a great performance. Absolutely. He's a cowboy anyway. And the way, like, it was crazy that he appears early in episode one and you kind of go, what's the deal? And I knew I wanted to see more of him. Mm-hmm. And then when they kind of bring him into a scene, you know, that he owns basically, you went, oh, wow. look at who this person actually is.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of moving parts where they live, the whole thing that's going on with the farm and the way they're trying to keep it and their neighbors and disputes about land and all kinds of stuff. Mm. And then go on, Mike.
I was just going to say, like, you're in the zone at the moment after 1883. Do you think that has added to your enjoyment of this?
Well, maybe, like, these people could be descendants of the folks from 1883, you know. I definitely do like the cowboy movies.
Well, Will Patton was in Yellowstone, wasn't he?
Well, Patton was in that alien show with your man from ER.
As in Yellowstone being, isn't it the 1883 was the pre-runner? Yeah.
Yeah, so Will Patton was in, well, Armageddon, obviously.
Yeah. It's loads of stuff. Yeah.
Falling Skies. Sorry, guys, for the big delay there. Falling Skies.
Colonel Dan. Yeah.
I really liked him in that. So you had all those elements making a really cohesive story that, like, my parents would watch, you know, which isn't usually a bar for me, but they would have watched and enjoyed it, right? And then there's this whole sci-fi element, which I loved, because I immediately, just like Thanos, I wanted to understand what it was all about, you know, and he's trying to figure out the mystery, and so was I, you know. So, I just think it's really, really well-written TV. And then you have, like, Imogen Poots that you mentioned turns up. Why is she here, you know?
Very, very direct and inquisitive questions that girl has. She knows more than she's letting on, I'd say. She's a very cute one, all right, that one.
So, here, we have to put up the shiny euro for the end of the show. Do you think the hole in the ground is going to come to Anton? Or is it going to end up being a cowboy land dispute?
So, is it, as they say in the trailer, is it a link between heaven and earth?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a time machine? Or is it an alternate universe?
Yes.
There's three options already. Is there another option? A portal.
Mike has read the source material here.
Oh, has he?
Well, he thinks he has.
Well, I think I have. If it's going where I think it's going, it's not going to end up very well for Josh Brolin and co. we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah.
Because the color out of space starts with a hole in the ground, and the farmers involved get slowly and slowly sicker as a result of what's in that in that hole.
Yeah.
And as they get sicker, they also get more attracted to the hole. So we'll see. Let's see as it goes on. You'll probably know by episode 3 or 4 if they forget about the hole. You know, they've
done. Did they not tell us what it was at the end of episode 2, though?
Well, that's where my 3 options came from.
Did they, Mark?
Yeah, I guess that's the question, right?
Yeah.
If it was simple or obvious, it wouldn't be well written TV, and this seems to have well written all over it.
This show, by the way, has the best hook ever at the end of episode 1.
It does.
Did not see it coming. I couldn't press the button fast enough for next episode.
I know, yeah.
I was going to bed. I was just like, fuck that, and watching this.
What I liked about that? They obeyed the laws of physics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Listeners, you'll know what I mean after you watch the end of episode 1.
Yeah. So how about Star Trek, Mark?
Star Trek Discovery.
And just the laws of physics in general.
Oh, hold on.
Like, don't ignore him. He's just riling.
Everyone knows how well the Heisenberg compensators work during matter energy transport.
Right. So we're going to recommend this, yeah? Everyone should watch it. Amazon Prime.
100%. Yeah.
Everyone should watch it.
Despite Mike's attempt to derail me.
Sorry, I meant to say Slow Horses on Apple TV as well. Apple TV, it's doling out a lot of quality stuff.
It certainly is.
Unlike poor old Netflix at the moment. I know. Poor old Netflix.
Netflix. Anybody got stocks in Netflix?
Oh, I'd say Disney Plus are kind of looking at it going,
Disney Plus don't have very much at the moment. Like,
nothing new, but they have, historically, they've got some bangers in there.
They have Moon Knight every week, but I don't think that's really setting the world on fire. Like,
Yeah.
But they've got Star Wars, you know.
They always have Star Wars.
Yeah.
But it was quite telling.
Mickey Mouse, who is problematically woke-wise. There's been some stuff stirring around the internet lately about 1930s Mickey Mouse.
Oh, come on.
Unpleasant. This is come what they on. Do. They dig shit up, man. They dig shit up.
You know what the problem is? They don't have enough adversity in their lives. So they're sitting around their arses looking for something to give out about. They have too much time in their hands. What they need is a good kick in the arse and go out picking stones out of the potato field for a few days or out in the bog, foot and turf. They wouldn't be fucking enough time for this bullshit.
The cotton fields.
I think that's the direction he was going.
Don't even know what you're talking about, Mike. But, that's what needs to be happening.
I think he was just pointing out that a hard day's work is absent from the youth of today. No, I'm not saying I did an immense amount of hard day's work in my youth, but I did more than my older children are likely to do.
You certainly weren't sitting around trying to pick holes in 1930s cartoons, see if it offends someone, trying to get offended at it about it, you know.
Yeah, true.
But like, somebody could watch that 1930s cartoon at any stage and be offended.
I know, right? Someone could read a history book. Holy shit. Imagine that. Have you seen the shit that's in history books?
Listen, shush. Mark doesn't know about the Titanic.
Yeah. I've seen that movie.
And don't get me started, Nicky fucking Lauda.
I've seen that movie too.
Oh, God, that's so funny. Anything else you want to talk about before we finish up here, guys? Jesus, made it sound like a meeting. I finished The Dropout. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It's brilliant. Okay. That's all I'm saying on that. It's brilliant. I finished it. Yeah. I had a bit of a lull in the middle, and I kind of went, and then I came back to it, and I was just like, oh God, I couldn't wait to finish. It was brilliant. Yeah. It's a great show, and I can't wait to see the rest of the trial. Trial's coming up. Oh, it's going to be dirty. Jeez, the last episode got fierce dirty. I'll talk to you when you've seen it or when the trial's on. But they're both very smart people, but... you know, just silly smart. Anyway, anything else? No? Anyone? Last minute? Going, classic. Gone. Okay. All right. So, from Mike Park and Steve.
Stay classy.
See.